He served at the Pentagon as an Army JAG. He graduated from Notre Dame and has 2 law degrees from Boston University and Georgetown University. He's been practicing law for over 30 years. He's your family's personal attorney. It's time for the David Carrier Show.
Hello and welcome to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. You have found the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. Give us a call at 888-463-2843. That's 888-463-2843. If you have a question, comment, or concern about wills, trusts, or probate, if you're wondering how do those powers of attorney things work, what is that all about? If you're wondering about the high cost of long-term care, if you've got a house to sell or a house to buy, or if you're looking at starting a business, stopping a business, or just keeping that business going, now is the time to give us a shout at 888-463-2843. I did want to give you a little update on, we've gotten a lot of emails and prayers coming for my son Kevin, who's over in Afghanistan. Unfortunately, had a little mishap over the past week. They're out on the weapons range. He was observing up in a tower, and apparently he was going down. Somebody else was coming up, and the end result of the thing is he's got a sprained ankle and a broken wrist. But he was very pleased that he did not have, they casted the wrist and didn't have to medevac him or anything. So he gets to, he's a platoon leader over there, gets to stay with his platoon, which is really very important for him. So keep those prayers coming. Obviously, they're doing what they need to be doing. Hey, we've got, as I promised earlier, we've got a special surprise guest, Mike Faber, from the Older Learner Center at Grand Rapids Community College. Morning, Mike. Welcome to the David Carrier Show.
Good morning, David. Thank you for having me here.
More than happy to have you. And I understand that you're involved with the Caregiver Resource Network. What is that?
I am. The Caregiver Resource Network is a collaboration now of over 130 organizations throughout West Michigan, and your organization is one of them, that are dedicated to providing for the needs and welfare of family and professional caregivers. We formed actually in 2001 with the sole intention of helping family caregivers to connect with resources that exist in the community. What we were hearing from caregivers far too often is that they'd make 8 or 10 phone calls and not be able to find the help that they needed, or maybe find only a portion. And I think that's related to the fact that we have such a wonderful community of resources here, but most of them are either small for-profits or small nonprofits that have very little marketing dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So here they have these great resources, and people didn't know how to access them. So we pulled this group together, and it's a group of even competitors, to basically share information and resources and jointly educate the community around caregiver issues and needs and direct caregivers to resources. Why is that important?
I don't know. Jeepers, Mike, why is that important?
Well, that was a
little bit. Help me out with that one.
Because I think the majority of family caregivers today do not self-identify as caregivers. The main reason is...
Wait a second. That must be a college term. What do you mean self-identify?
What I mean is they don't see themselves in that role. The reason is they see themselves in their primary role as husband, wife, son, daughter, sibling.
So in other words, I'm just doing the good thing. Well, of course I'm taking care of my mom. Who else is going to do that?
That's right. And so I think because they don't identify as a caregiver, they also don't seek any support or resources. We find that nationally, only about 10 to 20% of family caregivers take advantage of any kind of support resources that exist in a community.
Right. It's even worse. It's even worse, even a lower percentage with the we estimate, and who knows? That's the problem with statistics.
That's right.
Ask me a question, I'll give you a number, but who knows where it falls? But I in my mind, I'm thinking 2% maybe of people who actually do the elder law planning,
right,
who actually do this stuff, and it's huge. It's a gigantic unmet need, and it's not surprising to me that only 20-30% of folks get even the very big. It's pretty obvious, I guess, Meals on Wheels. That's pretty obvious,
mm-hmm,
right? The legal stuff is even less obvious, that there are things that you can, that you can really do about it. And so you guys sort of fill in the gap there, right, to connect people to the resources.
It really is.
The resources.
It's about connecting, and it's about sharing resources, because if we don't work together to educate the community, then everyone loses. On the other hand, if we work together to educate the community, we're not selling anything, but we're educating. Mm-hmm. We educate the community. Caregivers get the resource connection they need.
Let me clarify.
Right.
The law offices of David Carrier is selling something. Just
that's right.
I just want to make sure.
I'm talking about the larger Caregiver Resource
right.
Network.
Sure.
We're a grassroots coalition, basically,
right.
And the goal is basically to make the community a better place for family caregivers, because the numbers are pretty amazing, the number of people right here who are doing this heroic work of caregiving.
So how many, estimate, I mean, how many people are doing the, are caregiving?
If we look at nationally, 1 in 4 households in America is involved in some form of elder care. Here in Kent County, the research that's been done suggests that it's over 1 in 3. It's about 37% of the households here in Kent County. So it's significant.
Now, out of that 37%, we're saying that, 20% of those people are receiving the help? 20-30% of the 37%?
Maybe 20%.
Okay.
So we have an underserved community, people who we have these resources and people who need them. So it's about connecting.
You know, I think back on my own parents. you know, that's the thing about having parents. You know, you get to see some of this. But you know what we would do as the kids? We would arrange for someone to go out to the house, and my mom would meet them at the door. Oh, we're fine. you know, it's like, no, we don't need any help here, you know. And it really is kind of a, not only on the caregiver side of things, but also on the parent side of things to say, you know, we need some help here.
That's right. There can be resistance to the kind of care that as adult children we feel mom or dad might need, or grandma or grandpa.
Right.
And those are the kinds of things, though, that professionals in the community can also help the family members to deal with.
Right.
Because it is complex, and it's complex to understand the systems and all the different kinds of support that exist.
Sure. Well, you know, one of the things that we do repeatedly, and I've said this before, it's not – lots of times families will come to us, and they'll say, the kids will come and say, no one listen, you know, dad won't listen to anybody, and mom won't listen anymore, my spouse won't listen to anybody. I've been trying to get them to do this, that, or the other thing forever and a day. And it's very frustrating for the family members to be in that position of saying, we're trying to get them to do this, we're trying. But, you know, the problem is you need a third party. You need somebody else, somebody who's not a family member. With my own folks, you know, my mother would, you know, When I would suggest things to do, my mom was like, oh, David, you know, well, David, whatever. And my father was like, yeah, I got to do that. And then he'd go off and do something else, you know, until, you know, you get right down to it. And so often the situation is we're dealing with people, we're dealing with families where I haven't said anything different than the spouse has been saying, than the kids have been saying. But all of a sudden the light goes on and people, oh, okay. You know, and that's the...
That third party is so important. We call those the family meetings because, you know, there are interesting family dynamics.
Right.
And there's no such thing as a normal, quote-unquote, family. I mean,
well, my opinion is I don't think there's no normal family. I think all families are normal.
Okay, well, that's a different way to look at it, but that's correct. That is correct. And the reality is, though, families struggle with these issues,
right.
And they don't always see eye to eye, as I'm sure you know.
Right.
And the reality is, you may have, let's say, you have the adult daughter who lives here locally, who's actually the one who's the primary caregiver, helping mom and dad.
Right.
And then you've got the son who lives in California, and the son maybe talks to mom or dad, you know, once a month on the phone for 10 minutes, and he thinks everything's fine, but he's not seeing what's going on here at home.
Right, right. I got to confess, I was one of those parachute kids. But you know, adjust everything to the east. You know, instead of someone from California parachuting into GR, I was from GR parachuting into Cape Cod. And it was my sisters and my brothers out in that area who were really, you know, kind of pulling on the oar. But, you know, at least we have 8 kids in the family. 3 are not local. 3 are not local to mom and dad. And so I think the 3 of us, you know, the parachute kids, were very supportive and very sympathetic.
Good.
To what the parents, you know, what the – but we see it. You know, and one of the problems, of course, is – it's, you know, the old no good deed goes unpunished. If you're the person providing the care, it is not at all unusual for the parents to be blaming you, the caregiver, for the situation they find themselves in. Whereas the kid from out of town parachutes in, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, but Jimmy's so wonderful.
That's right. They're perfect.
Yeah. They're perfect. Yeah. No.
And the reality is those family...
He doesn't make me do these things.
That's right. And those family dynamics are at play.
Right.
And so sometimes it takes that outside third disinterested party to actually work with the family.
Right.
To not only educate them, but also to help them to really come to terms about what's really going on and what resources are there to support their loved ones.
Exactly right. We'll be right back with our guest, Mike Faber. You've been listening to The David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. Welcome back to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney, and you have found the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. Money for nothing and your advice for free. Yeah, that's well, we don't really give advice here, right? It's just kind of a lively legal discussion, and we're lively legally discussing with Mike Faber of the Caregiver Resource Network. Now, here's I'd like to give you the website, all right? You know, davidcarrierlaw.com. You've already got that one. I know it's on the... on your speed dial, your computer if you've got one. Anyway, here's another website for you, www.caregiverresource, that's all one word, caregiverresource.net, not .com. I know you're going to put .com in there. Don't put .com. Caregiverresource.net, okay? And there's all kinds of, you know, this is the thing that that we're fighting for, of course. I mean, for the last 10 years we've been doing, Mike and I were talking, one of the things we've been trying to do for the last 10 years with the radio show is to, and the workshops. I mean, this is the whole point of it, right? Get people to come to the workshop. Look, the world doesn't work the way you think it does. I mean, this is the fundamental thing you have to accept. The world does not work the way you think it does. Okay, you think, oh, my kids will take care of me. Oh, we'll take care of mom and dad. Oh, there's nothing that can be done. Okay, none of those things are true. None of those things are true. There are things that you can do. You're not alone, okay? There are very effective, and it will make a difference in the quality of life. And one of the things, you know, that frankly we don't, that I don't focus on as much as I might, is the effects that caregiving situation has on the whole family. And Mike, I wonder if you could just, you know, elaborate on that a little bit. You know, it's the old throw the stone in the pond and look at the ripples go.
Absolutely. Caregiving is something that affects the entire family. I call it a caregiver. Caregiving is a family affair.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is it's not just the primary caregiver, and it's probably important to know there are different kinds of caregivers. The primary caregiver is the one who provides direct care mm-hmm. on a daily basis. It could be the spouse or adult child. The secondary caregiver is the one supporting the primary caregiver, maybe the adult children supporting a spouse.
Well, I mean, how do you mean support? I mean, like saying attaboy or...
It could be any number of things. It could be the emotional support, which is kind of what the attaboy gets to, but
yeah.
It's usually financial support,
uh-huh.
getting mom or dad to the doctor, helping to buy groceries, maybe helping with the bills. There are any number of ways that families may be involved. Maybe housekeeping. It may actually be direct personal care.
Mm-hmm.
So there are any number of things that could go on in that role. And then one you were talking about earlier is the long-distance caregiver. When you're living here and your loved ones are out east,
right.
Still a role, still an important role. So everyone has a role. So we have.
But you know, one of the things when you talk about the long-distance caregiving, one of the like I would talk to mom on the phone for half mm-hmm. hour, 45 minutes at a time, you know, at
mm-hmm.
least once a week, that sort of thing. I talk to my dad two or three times a week right now, but the thing is, I would get off the phone feeling pretty good about it, and then I would check in with my sisters who are like, oh, mom's doing terrible. I was like, I just talked to her for 45 minutes. She seems pretty good, and you really get sort of a false impression. You
sure.
can get a false impression, I guess. When you're not there in person.
A skewed picture, and even
right.
when we're dealing with situations related to Alzheimer's or dementia, sometimes for short periods of time, people can kind of put on a good face, you know, and actually make a lot of sense. And
mm-hmm.
So sometimes the long-distance caregivers don't see on a day-to-day basis the kinds of things that the primary caregiver living there sees.
Right.
But to get back to, because I don't want to forget this, the family piece.
Right, right.
Even if the caregiver is the adult daughter, which is the most common scenario right now, the reality is, how does that impact her spouse, her kids, her work, her friends? If she's involved in family caregiving, there is actually an impact in all those different areas. Oftentimes, the spouse is also involved, and the children
right.
are directly involved. My wife and I and our six kids, we just spent the last 8 years caring for my mother-in-law, who passed away in June, who lived with us, who had Parkinson's and dementia. And the reality is, it involves the entire family.
Right.
The entire family has to make sacrifices.
Mm-hmm.
The entire family is involved. But at the same time, as I told you, it's also a blessing. It's a great opportunity. It's a great life lesson for the kids and
right.
the family as well,
mm-hmm.
about family. But caregiving really does impact everyone in that family unit.
Right, right. I mean, we've had a number of situations where we had one spouse or the other. It was the son or the daughter, you know, who would provide that care sometimes for years, to the point where, you know, when they finally come to you know, and that's the thing. So often people don't want to go see the lawyer until it's like back is to the wall, you know, and the and the lions are coming or something.
They're
I don't
in
know.
Crisis. Yeah,
but not just early in the crisis. I mean, it's like the Titanic, you know, the waves are over the bow, you know what I mean? You wait that long. And then at that point, you can turn it around, right? But it makes you wonder, I mean, how often are there divorces? How often are there, you know, breakups of families? Because it could have been a positive experience, as you had, right?
Yes.
But I've seen it go the other way, where just huge stress on the family because, you know, the one is gone taking care of the parent, you know, for a long time. And if they had just used some of the resources that are available,
that's
okay,
right.
Mom wouldn't have to be, Dad wouldn't have to be absent from the family that many hours a week, you know, and the financial stress. I mean, forget about overtime. I mean, now you're doing, you know, you're giving up the basics.
Absolutely. David, I think you really hit the nail on the head when you talked about waiting till crisis. Unfortunately, family caregivers usually wait until they're deep within the crisis to seek any kind of support or help. And as you know, what is your thought process when you're in the middle of a crisis? Is it really clear? Do you make the best decisions? Do you always have the best options available to you at that point,
right.
you know, instead of being proactive? So part of the reason why the Caregiver Resource Network exists and is to educate families not to get into that situation,
right.
you know, to be proactive and to look at your resources. I think some families also think that they're a failure in some way if they have to seek some outside
right.
support, or they're going to let down mom or dad, or they have this obligation. The reality is, you're not going to, I'm speaking directly to any caregiver out there today, you're not going to let them down unless you don't seek help and you burn out and then you're not able to take care of them, because it
right.
will affect your health if you're overly stressed. It will affect your well-being and your ability to continue that care. So these supports are there in the community not to take away but to enhance.
Right. I couldn't agree. You know, it's all, here's the thing too, Mike. It's all good news, okay? You're not hearing any bad news. This is all good news, all right? I mean, one of the things we emphasize to our clients, all we have around here are happy faces and good news, because you know something? It can't get worse, all right? I mean, if your back's against the wall, if you're in a tough situation, it's all good news. Now, get on over to our website, davidcarrierlaw.com, or you can always head over to the Caregiver Resource Net. That's www.caregiver.com. Resource, two R's there, okay? Don't skimp on the R's. CaregiverResource.net, and, you know, make available. Oh, and there's there's our music. You've been listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. Welcome back to the David Carrier Show. And if you have the radio on and you're driving, Now is the time. I guess now is not the time to call 888-463-2843. But as soon as you get where you're going, then you can call 888-463-2843 and get your question, comment, or concern on the air. And when you get there, too, you can get on over to the website, davidcarrierlaw.com, because that's how you sign up for one of our free life plan workshops. These are the workshops we do every week, the good Lord brings, and twice on Sundays. No, not on Sundays at all, actually, but twice on Valentine's Day, that's for sure. And Valentine's Day is coming up. Is there anything more romantic, more heartfelt, more redolent of Cupids and stuff like that than a life plan workshop? Yeah, probably lots of things. But anyway, we're doing a life plan workshop twice on Valentine's Day. And, if you got nothing better to do, we'd love to see you there. Even if you do have better things to do. Is there anything better? Yeah, there really are better things to do than come to a life plan workshop, depending on your circumstances. But if you do come to a life plan workshop on Valentine's Day, we would love to see you there. And there'll be surprise prizes. What exactly those surprise prizes are going to be is a closely guarded secret. Almost as, like with the groundhog and the shadow and all the rest of it. You only find out on the day. We've got Ed on the line. Good morning, Ed. Welcome to the David Carrier Show.
Thanks. How are you doing?
I'm just perking and working and having a ball.
Right on. See, I got a question about real estate. There's two questions to it. I bought a manufactured home, and when I did it, I had really bad credit. I was just out of a divorce.
All right.
So my mother actually was going to co-sign with me, but the people had her go on the loan and said I could co-sign. And what turned out happening is she had the loan. I'm not on that, but I'm on the title. So now she's coming up to 90 and kind of dealing with what you just talked about with the last guy.
Right.
What happens to the house if she passes? Does it automatically go to me, or do I got to refinance, or what happens? And then the second question is, it's related to it, is that just slipped out of my head. Let's just answer that.
All right. Let's don't overburden me, Ed. I don't know if I can take two at the same time. But here's the thing. Are you and your mom joint on the title? Do you know? Does it say joint?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it comes both in our names, the taxes and the title and everything is in my name.
Well, look and see what it says actually on the title, okay, just to make sure it says. Now, this is a a park, right? I mean, you don't own the ground underneath.
No, I put it on land.
Well, who owns the land?
I did it as a package. You could buy the land, the house, and the improvements all in one loan, and then it was all together.
Did they take the wheels and the hitch off the manufactured home?
Yeah. I'm on a slab.
Oh, okay. All right. So there's no separate title at this point to the manufacturer. It's just a deed. Is that right?
Yeah. I'm on the deed, the title to the house.
Okay, but
the taxes come in both names.
All right, but here's what I'm trying to get at. When you have real estate, when you have dirt plus bricks and sticks, right, then the only thing you have is a deed. You don't have here's the confusing part, of course. You can call the deed the title, but it's
right.
Whereas when you have a mobile home, put it that way, when you have a mobile home in a park, now you have a title, a separate piece of paper like you have for an automobile, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you have both? Do you have a deed and a title like that, or is it all?
I'm not positive on the title, but I know that we have the paper, like you said, like the car deal.
Okay,
I'm on that, but I'm not sure of the other one. I'm not positive. It's been 12 years since I looked at it.
Well, let's look at it, okay?
All right.
Because you really got to look at it because now if you're jeepers, it's tough to know what's going on because. Let's put the manufactured home to the side for just a moment and focus on the dirt. Who owns the dirt at this point? That would be my question. Did you own it before? Did you borrow money to buy it? How did that go?
We went to one of the home places and they do it it's called a package deal. You buy the land, they finance that, they finance the home and the improvements to put it on the land.
Okay.
So it all comes in one package.
All right. So it all came in one package, but there were two. There was a deed. The deed went to the dirt, and then you have the title that goes to the manufactured home. Okay, you got two. You got two different pieces of paper that say who owns it. Let's start with the deed first. If it says that you and your mom own it as joint tenants with rights of survivorship, and she goes into the nursing home, you better not have her release that back to you, because if she does, now she's made a gift. But if she doesn't release it back to you, then that was her homestead, because she's living there, right? She's living there, isn't she?
She never lived here, ever. I just had it and got all the payments.
Gotcha. Oh, okay. And then she has her own home, is that right?
Yeah, she did. She lived in an apartment, but now she's living in assisted living and getting close to probably going to the nursing home. She's been doing exactly what your last thing was talking about, with the caregivers.
Right. Did she ever live at your place?
No.
Okay.
It was strictly bought for me to have.
Gotcha. Well, then that property, she what you do is you look at her life expectancy, 90, and then you look at the value of what this property is, and then she's got a life estate in that. Okay, she has the right, because if she's a joint tenant with rights of survivorship, I'm making a lot of guesses here, but if she is joint tenant with rights of survivorship, as opposed to being the sole owner of the thing, at the very least, she has the right, a life estate, what we saw, a right to live there while she's alive, and that has a value. And at 90, it's probably around 15%, 20% of the value of the property, but you can calculate it. And if she goes into long-term care, she's going to be treated. So let's say it's $100,000, and let's say the factor is 20%. Now she's going to be treated as if she had $20,000. She doesn't have $20,000. She's got a joint interest in your property. But for the Medicaid, she's going to be treated as if she had that, $20,000, even though all she ever did was co-sign the loan. So if she does need that, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I was going to say, I wonder if she's the sole owner, because these guys were shady. They shafted me in every which way you can think. I doubt very much if we're both co-tenants. I'd say she's probably the sole person, because I wasn't on the loan. They said I was going to be, but I never made it there. So I think it's probably, like, basically all in her name that way.
Well, then if it's $100,000, then it's not even her homestead, not even exempt as homestead, because she didn't live there. And you don't even have to live there very long. Basically, if you spend the night there, it's good enough. But, you know, if she didn't do that, then you can't exclude it as homestead.
Well, what happens at the end when she dies? Does it automatically go to me, or is it going to be hers and we have to fight for it, or what happens?
First things first, okay? I mean, how do we get her qualified for the care? I mean, right now she should be, in my opinion, she should be on the Medicaid already. I mean, because there are some programs that'll help out. But
I believe she is. She does get a pension, too, but I believe she is on Medicaid.
Not Medicare, Medicaid.
Medicare, yeah, I think so. I know there's something that helps. I'm not completely up on it. My wife does all that stuff, you know.
I'm with you.
You know how it is.
Yeah, I do. Yes, I do. Well, here's, okay. At this point, there's just too many branches in the road, okay?
Right.
You got to find out who owns that property. You got to find out whose name is on the deed. You got to find out whose name is on the title. Okay. Now, if your mom's name and your name, or it doesn't even matter if your mom's name only is on the land, on the mortgage, right? Residential mortgage, then you can keep making the payments on that. Even though she dies, they can't call the loan. But it's different with consumer debt. You know, it's different with the.
Right.
The title. So we got to find out what promissory note goes to what, which, right? And we just got to make sure that if mom passes, that you own the property and that they can't call the loan. You know, unless are you at a point like right now? What if the mortgage company called up and said, okay, you got $30,000 balance, pay us. Well, you can't write a check for 30. I get that, but are you in a position now to refinance it? That's the question.
Right, that's what I was wondering, if they let us do it. That also leads into my second question. That's what I was going to say is, when we got the loan, it was through X company, and the girl worked there, and she went to another company, and she called up and said, hey, I can get you a better rate, and we want to do it.
Ed, you're going to have to hold, Ed, I'm getting the high sign. You got to hold that till the next segment, okay? We'll get into that when we get there. You've been listening to The David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney.
Me, you know she's happy as can be, you know she said so. I'm in love with her and I feel fine. Baby says she's not.
Welcome back to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. Of course, sometimes you're out there looking for adventure, and sometimes you just need a place to live. And that's where it gets interesting. Am I right, Ed? Ed, where are you?
That's correct. David, turn me on.
Ed.
Hello?
Yeah, right here. Okay, here's the thing. We need to find out who owns what, under what circumstances. I mean, it could go a couple of different ways, but let me tell you that if the way they did it was basically sold it to mom and put you on as a co-guarantor, as a guarantor maybe, then we got troubles, because if mom passes, now we got to probate the dirt. If we probate the dirt and mom did receive Medicaid, which is what you're telling me, now the state of Michigan, through estate recovery, is going to want it. Okay?
Really?
They said, yeah, see you later, Ed. Here's your eviction notice. Oh, by the way, do you want to buy it? Okay? I'm serious.
Yep.
It's not, we're not joking about this. And if we keep it out of probate, now we've avoided estate recovery, so you don't have to worry about that aspect of it. But now you have to worry about, do I have to pay it off? And it's confusing to me right now whether mom is actually on the Medicaid. You're telling me that she is. I hear you say that. On the other hand, it's a mystery to me how she would qualify for the Medicaid if this situation, based on what I've heard of it, was accurately reported to the Department of Human Services. I'm guessing, I don't know who did the application, but I'm guessing that it was not accurately reported, because if she's never lived there, right, if this has always been your house, she just did it as a favor to you, et cetera, well, this is an asset now that she owns, that's a countable asset that has to be reported. And it's treated as if it was cash. Now, it's not cash. And there used to be another rule, but that's all gone now. And if mom has any interest in this property, it's treated like it was cash, it'll disqualify her from the Medicaid. Okay. So there's this is one of those things where the deeper you get into it, you know?
So basically, I'm going to have to get all my paperwork together and probably go in and see someone very similar to you. And
what do you mean very similar to me? There is nobody very similar.
I'll give you that. There isn't.
Very similar.
So real quick on another question.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
You transferred the loan? And now it's at a company, and I called the company up, and they say that they don't do manufactured homes for a loan because I wanted to reduce my mortgage rate.
Right.
But they already got the loan there. Can they go, we didn't know this was that or something, and re-get me? Or since they already have the loan, are they obligated to?
No. You get the deal already. Now, maybe they played some folderol to get them to get the second company to take it, or maybe they've changed their policy and they're just telling you, look, we're not going to refinance it, you know, God bless you, but they're not going to call the loan because it's a manufactured home. You know, I'll tell you a story. Yeah. I had a when I was in Washington, when I was at the Pentagon, I had a house that looked like a regular house, and then the guys doing the inspection before we sold it, he says, you know, this is a prefab. It was like, apparently all the houses in that neighborhood were prefabs, but you couldn't tell. You know, I mean, it looked like a, you know, it was, but what they had done back in the 50s or whenever they built the thing, they just kind of showed up and stuck it on the, and it was a slab, was a crawl space.
That's what I got.
Yeah, you can't always tell, you know. It's not obvious, you know, whether a thing's a prefab or manufactured home or whatever else, so.
Exactly.
Yeah, but you don't have to worry. I would say that you don't have to worry about the thing getting called now.
Should I try to refinance or not? Or
I would. Yeah, why not go to one of the mortgage companies? I mean, and I wouldn't wait 6 months.
Well, because the mortgage companies, if you go, they're higher than what I'm paying now for manufactured home on land.
Oh.
So I was running the risk of, man, oh, we're not supposed to do that, and then they're going to jump me up 4 points instead of going down two or three.
Right, got you covered. Got you covered. Well, yeah. Well, then I there's a there's
just
an
get it out of mom's name, get it into mine.
There's no question that you need to address that issue. That has got to be done. There's no question that has got to be done. We need to figure out very clearly exactly what's going on. There's no question about that. That's essential.
All righty.
All right.
Good deal. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Ed. You've been listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. Let's say we got some. Oh, here's a good one, and this sort of gets to Ed's point a little bit. Will monetary gifts have to be returned if aging parent enters nursing home? Mom sold her home, moved in with me 2 years ago. When she moved in, she paid off my second mortgage, no idea how much money that was, and also gifted $40,000 to her kids. I guess that's her other children. Since then, mom's development dementia may have to go to nursing home. She still has some money from sale of her house. Once that's gone, will the home try to recoup the money that has already been spent? In other words, the money that she gave away. Here's the thing. You're not entitled to be paid because your mom's living with you, okay? In fact, there's no entitlement for reimbursement. There's no title for care. No entitlement to be paid for care services that you provide, that a family member provides to the mom or dad, nothing like that, okay? So that was a gift. Paying off the second mortgage, the $40,000 that you admit was a gift, that is definitely a gift, okay? No question about those. But here's how it works. It's not like the state is going to come after you and say, give us back the money. No, no. What happens is the state imposes a penalty period. The state just says, we're not paying. Mom is broke. Mom is in the nursing home. We're not paying. You ran out of money. We're not paying. Okay? Because you gave away this money over here, we're not paying. Because you gave away so much, we're not paying for the next year. Okay? When that happens, the nursing home says, well, Mom, you have to leave. Oh, except state law says they can't kick her out, okay? They can't give Mom the heave-ho because she needs that level of service, okay? So what they're going to do is they're going to come after the people who received the stuff, you and the other kids. They're going to say, well, this was a fraudulent transfer when Mom gave you guys the money because she knew that she was going to need nursing home care, blah, 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 and they're going to come after you. And it won't be the state. See, this is everyone. Oh, the state's going to come after me. No, it won't be the state. It's much worse. It's the facility, and they don't care. You know, it's like, hey, you know, we're providing the services. You owe us the money. You know, here's what happened. And it's not like you're dealing with a state employee, you know, who's sort of doesn't care. So you're dealing with the person who's providing the services who needs to get paid. Okay, it's a very, very serious thing. So the monetary gifts won't have to be, quote, unquote, returned, but there will be a penalty period, and it could very well lead to suits against the kids who received the money to pull that money back. Of course, you can't get blood out of a turnip, we understand that, but, you know, it definitely a high-risk strategy at this point. You've been listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. Looking forward to seeing you at our Valentine's Day workshop, at the Muskegon workshop, and coming March 1st at our office over in Holland. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney.
You've been listening to The David Carrier Show, a lively discussion addressing your questions and concerns, but not legal advice. There is a big difference. So when making decisions that affect your family, your property, or yourself, the best advice is to seek good advice, specific to your unique needs. If you missed any of today's show or would like additional information about the law offices of David Carrier, please visit davidcarrierlaw.com.